Good morning and welcome, everyone. Today is Tuesday, March 21st, 2017. It is 9 a.m. This is the general discussion of the Board of Commissioners. We have two items on the agenda. First, we have RVCOG annual update, and then number two, we have OSU Extension Services presentation. So we've got 2 hours to do this because we've got a public hearing scheduled for 11 o'clock. So don't feel rushed, but at the same time,
yeah,
at that 11 o'clock hour, we'll have to transition where we're at.
Yeah, it's fine.
Well, good morning,
well,
Mr.
Good
Cavalera.
Morning, yeah.
How are you?
You know, to tell you the truth, I probably should have canceled because we found out yesterday that Pat Foley passed away.
Oh, my gosh.
No kidding.
Yeah, that's totally appropriate. We don't have to do this today. You're
wow.
Kidding. Wow, that's huge. What a neat opportunity to see her last week.
Yeah.
You never know, right? That's crazy. What a special lady.
Pat, gosh. I know her through the act for years.
Yeah, I mean, she was there when I first got here.
Mm-hmm.
You know, almost 19 years ago.
Right. But she had such energy last. Was it just last week?
Yeah. I mean, she had fallen and had an accident. You know,
she seemed fine.
Yeah, she was getting back to the whole.
Michael, let's just do this another time. There's no rush.
Yeah.
I would appreciate it if you didn't. If we didn't do it today.
Okay.
That'd be great.
Appreciate it.
Yep.
Okay.
Do it another day. What a gal. Thanks for coming by, though. Next time we'll be. Yeah. Pat Foley passed away.
Yeah.
That's crazy.
She gave a presentation last week.
Last week. She was sitting right there. I don't know, but what a way to go.
She fell down and broke her hip here a while back, and they replaced her hip here.
Yeah. She looked like she was fine. Same energy.
No.
Yeah.
So Michael came over, but we go home. Yeah. No.
I'm sorry to hear that.
Yeah.
Good lady. She was very, very well liked.
Quite a gal.
I see a sea of orange. That's really exciting. You know, you got stirred up in us in excitement, so I tell you.
Well, there's a song that is get it under wraps. Well, let's move on with the OSU 4-H Extension presentation.
Thank you.
We've got that coming up next. I think that's what we you guys had yesterday. Didn't somebody come? You came in yesterday, right? Oh,
yeah. No,
what do
you
want to do?
I did bring in a PowerPoint yesterday, and they were going to hook it up and show it on the screen there.
Okay, that sounds great.
That was the intent.
Well, we've got extra time right now, so let's take the time. Good morning.
Good morning.
Start that out. No rush. We are vast audience. Oh wait, it's just you. You know, last time we did this, last two times it seemed we did this over at the Ann Basker City Televised.
And that's what we thought was happening, but it got moved. I'm not sure why. But.
Oh, you know what? It's Tuesday. So the jury has an orientation on Tuesdays.
Unless you wanted to serve in jury, I've done enough of it.
I think we've all done it before.
You want to hear something while you're here? We've been from the local home.
You know, we've had two vehicular homicides in a week. And it's stirring up people as far as passions and, you know, and they're all kids involved. And it's like, what do you do, you know? Well, so I don't know if they told you, Dan and I both are taking part in County College. County College with Association of Oregon Counties with Oregon State University Extension. So our first weekend was at the OSU campus, and we got a complete rundown of Extension Services and everything they're doing across the state. And I said, we both said, what about us? What's going on in our neck of the woods? And, you know, regional stops at Eugene, and they said, oh, we got $12 million we're going to spend here, 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 and there, and we weren't on the list. And I'm like,
we weren't even on the map.
No.
It was like we were already in the state of Jefferson, and you guys realized that we were in.
So it was one of those exciting things. I'm like, I want to know how we can partner more. I already, coming back from that weekend, I had my whole packet, the OSU Extension packet, and I was on the phone with a friend of mine who was applying for the career position at Grants Pass High School to be the next teacher taking over the person who's retiring. And I said, you need to know about OSU Extension. They could be a partner with you at Grants Pass High School. And I literally drove straight to her house before even coming home, handed her my packet. She put it in her presentation and got the job.
Uh-huh.
And so I'm...
And Shauna Bland and I already talked to her.
Yes, wonderful. So
yes, I know Shauna.
Because Dan and I are in County College, I learned about it, that passed it to her, that she contacted y'all. Because to me, I see this as we have to stop thinking as individual silos of what we're doing. We have to start being community-minded. And start looking at goals, bigger picture. And so Dan and I both, you know, asked, you know, Simon's familiar with y'all because he's been working, but and he did 4-H forever, but for us, we want to see how we can do more.
I'd still be doing the 4-H if I could.
Yeah, with all your spare time, Simon, we need to come back.
Yes, please silence your phone.
Sorry about that.
Popular. Okay, shall I start?
Yeah, well, come on up, John.
Good morning.
Introduce yourself.
Mr. Here. Good
to see you, sir.
I'm Young.
Andy.
Lily.
Lily, nice to meet you. John Punches. I am the Regional Administrator for Extension Programs in Southwest Oregon. So I cover the offices in Lane, Douglas, Josephine, and Jackson counties and Extension Programs there. And actually have a long history with this county. I've served here as the staff chair in this office for many years, and then also in Douglas County, and then more recently in this expanded regional role. So I've been doing stuff here for a long time. We've got lots of our faculty members here who oversee programs. Several of them are stationed here in Josephine County, but we also have a great collaborative relationship with staff who are in Jackson County, and they have assignments specifically to serve both counties. And so they're going to give you an overview of the type of things that we do in the two-county region, and specifically here in Josephine County. The Josephine County programs have local funding through a service district, and so I'll be working with you as we go through the service district budget process here over the next few months. It's going to mirror the stuff that you do with the county, but it's really streamlined. It basically has a line item for a contracted services item through OSU. It could be done differently, but that's the way it's worked. It's been very efficient that way, so we'll get you through that process quickly and cleanly, and I take care of the details around that, so there's not all your staff time invested in that. So we'll be working through that. We just wanted to give you a good overview of the type of things that we do here in this county. And as you've picked up from your experience with County College, Oregon State really takes its mission as Oregon's land-grant university very seriously. So we're engaged in every county in the state. We're engaged with our Native American populations. We have a specific office on the Warm Springs Indian Reservation. We have a lot of collaborative arrangements with other Native peoples. We really try to be in counties working with people, helping them solve problems. So today you're going to hear primarily about our extension programs, but we have just across the border down in Central Point is one of our regional agricultural experiment stations, the Southern Oregon Region Extension Center. So that's where we do a lot of the research here locally, particularly on wine grapes now and on all kinds of pests and diseases that impact fruit and tree crops. That's the big thing here. And we do pasture programs, we do livestock programs, we do forestry, we do lots of youth programs, we do nutrition, we do lots of things around gardening, and we have lots of volunteers involved, so they'll give you quite an overview of that. Your experience with County College probably shows you that Oregon State's integration with counties is even bigger than what Extension does. So, for instance, you may have heard about Open Campus, which is a program specifically put together to help communities solve problems, to bring the right players to the table. And in some cases, that means that all OSU does is serve as a convener. We may not even be the right people to help solve that, but we can help bring those people together. So Open Campus is available. a lot of our educational programs that used to just be campus-based are now available to people through eCampus, so they can be done online. We've become one of the leading colleges, universities in the nation for electronic types of degrees. Yes.
Do you prefer questions as we go, or do you want to wait till the end?
As you go, that's fine.
Yeah. Okay, going back to the wine industry, which is huge in Josephine and Jackson County, and now the cannabis industry is huge in Jackson County. How are the two, are you actively involved in having the two meet? Because you talk to wine growers and they don't want a cannabis grower next to them, and you talk to the cannabis growers and they don't, you know, there's this conflict.
Yep.
And there's two huge industries for our area.
We are actively engaged with the grape and wine industry. It's a major agricultural product. By federal law, we are prohibited from working with cannabis growers.
Okay.
Cannabis is still federally prohibited.
Good point.
And we can't engage with them because we take federal monies. That's a big part of how the university runs. So,
okay.
So we can't do
that's
that.
That's my answer, though.
Yep.
Somebody asked me that.
Yep.
I'd be able to tell.
Yep. Yeah, by federal law, we can't do that. We try to do as much as we can to help people with general crop issues. And we're looking for ways to be more engaged around kind of the land management aspects, because we know that there's fertilizer runoff, there's land price issues, things of that. Some of those we can engage, and we have to be very careful how we do that, because it has huge implications for the university. So federal funds fund things like Pell Grants for students. It funds research projects. It funds part of Extension Service. So there's big implications there if we cross that line.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah. And so we're cautious about that. So let me turn it over to my staff now. I think we're going to start with our youth development program and just kind of give you an overview of the things that you do. But I'm kind of your contact for lots of things. If
are you based in Eugene? Or
I'm actually in Roseburg.
Okay.
So I'm fairly close by. Yeah, it can be down here whenever needed.
Yeah, just an hour away. And any of you that need to are welcome to come up.
Yeah.
I mean, you don't have to stay out there.
When you come up.
Yeah.
Yeah. Feel free to
introduce yourself so it goes on record and just give your overview. Thanks, guys.
Okay. Well, Simon, I know.
Yes.
Good to see you again.
Good to see you.
Dan.
Andy.
Nice to meet you.
Really?
I'm Sue Hunt.
This is our informal boardroom.
Yeah, I know. I figured we'd be a little more relaxed in here, too. So.
No cameras.
Yeah.
Nice.
So, 4-H vision. Any of you know the history? I don't know if you know the history. The last 100 years of 4-H, and initially started out as a way for the universities to reach out to the agricultural community and teach farmers and their wives how to do better things. And the way they found to do that was by teaching the kids, who would then bring home all of their great progress. And mom and dad would go, "Oh, how did you do that?" And so they would pass it on. But as time went on, we've now become an organization that works on positive youth development. And so we're more concerned with the kids than the projects. And our object is to raise blue ribbon kids over and red, with red ribbon projects versus the other way around. So our focus is how do we develop them. And so this is our vision for the program. This is one, again, that was put together by all of our state agents got together, and this is how it was put together for us, that we're looking for a positive and thriving trajectory development that leads to an adulthood marked by health and well-being, economic stability, social success, and civic engagement.
So do you have a local board that oversees the 4-H program? Pardon my ignorance, I don't remember how it's structured.
Yes, we've had to restructure the IRS. Well, initially, I don't know if you know that 4-H was overseen by the U.S. Department of Ag.
Mm-hmm.
And so there were over 90,000 4-H entities in the United States. IRS says, "I know, you can't really do a good job of that." And so they basically turned the whole 4-H program in the nation around and said, each one of you as a state now has to come up with a way to oversee your programs. And so they've had to reorganize. We are now under the Oregon 4-H Foundation. They are our, it's called a general identification number, so that we get our IRS nonprofit status through the foundation. And the organization locally now is called the, in our case, the Josephine County 4-H Association. Every county has a 4-H association preceded by whatever the county is. So, yes, that is our fundraising form beyond what comes in through the service district. And so, yes, it does have a board. Currently, there are 12 members serving on it. They rotate 4 off every year, and it's a 3-year term for being on the board. We all have exactly the same bylaws, county by county, because that was one of the IRS requirements. It says you can't be operating different entities under this one particular group.
Okay.
And so
that goes state by state? Every state,
had to come up with their own plan that the IRS had to agree to. Yes. Yeah. So we like I said, we are under the foundation. They are the ones that we now have agreements with. There are agreements between the OA, the foundation and the association, and the university and the foundation as to roles, responsibilities, and who does what.
The state to state, there's no real continuity?
I don't know. We've never asked to see what other states have done, but again, they all had to be plans that the IRS said, okay, that will work for us, so you're good to go. And this was a 4-year process. We started this back in 2011, so...
Sue, clarify that's around the nonprofit status.
Right, that's the nonprofit part of our it's the extra funds that we bring in order to operate.
The programmatic emphasis is led by Oregon State University.
Correct.
Okay.
So the nonprofit is supposed to bring resources to the table for us to develop our programs within the county. So resources being people and funds.
And each county funds itself. Monies don't go around the state through the 4-H program. Or the Oregon 4-H Foundation. It's just up to each county to raise their own funds.
Yes. And we have not only our local funds, but then the foundation also holds for those that have larger endowments. There are some counties that actually have endowments that endow the faculty member in that particular county. Ultimately, they would like that because otherwise the money that comes through the legislature is up and again and down again and so on. They don't want to have to cut jobs. So, yeah. And so this was then the mission statement that we came up with. Basically, we want to engage youth in an atmosphere with other youth and adults so that they have positive interactions, to have participation over time. And again, the question is, how much time do we need? Which is some of the things that we're trying to look at research-wise to determine what is that optimal length of time to have the kids in the program to benefit. And again, there is not a lot of research yet on that, and so we're starting to really look at how can we gain that information to help move this program.
What age group are you looking at? In other words, when they get to 22, are they no longer?
For our program, we run the kids that are 5 years old through roughly 19.
Okay. So you couldn't still be in 46?
No, right. Yes, he can, because he can become a volunteer.
Yes.
And our volunteers learn also. Yes. I mean, we encourage even those people that have a passion or an interest in something that may not be experts, and to find kids that are interested in it and to learn together. I mean, this isn't a sage on the stage, this is a guide on the side kind of atmosphere. So
I'd make a motion that the chair has to volunteer 20 hours a week over at the 4-H compound. And, no, sorry. You guys like throwing motions out when someone's in.
Not here.
You want me to bring that recorder down here?
I was a bit oblivious at 4-H. I knew it happened in the county schools, and it probably does even in Grants Pass High School, but it wasn't something that I was familiar with growing up.
4-H really starts when you're in fourth grade, or now you can do these junior deals.
Yep, 5 years old.
Yeah.
Wow.
Young, but
yep.
Really, you could start out basically in fourth grade. Start with the paving stuff. You can do that anywhere.
Yeah.
Even in city limits?
Yeah.
Wow.
Well, you've got to find a place to put the pig, because I'm not sure the city would allow that.
Yeah.
So. So the final part is that we really want the kids to be able to make some kind of a meaningful contribution to their community, whether it's, within their club and as far as the county, and even some are making, state and national contributions depending on how they're involved.
What's your current membership in Josephine County?
We've just passed the 300 and about 320 at the moment. So we're enrolling right now. We just last week had our deadline for those that want to exhibit and fair in the livestock, horse and dog programs. We have the end of this next month for those that want to do small animals, which would be rabbits, cavies, and poultry.
Well, some of those are allowed inside the city limits, so I guess that's
correct.
What they could do.
So they could still do those kinds of things. Exactly.
I wake up to sheep bleeding in my
do you?
In the morning. Yeah.
Sometimes that's nice in people like that. So in our 4-H programming, they have kind of determined with research that they have done that there are four really essential elements that we need in order for the kids to benefit. One is a sense of belonging. One is a sense of mastery, one is a sense of independence, and a sense of generosity. With belonging, again, it's that group of peers and adults. And then having many opportunities to master some skill or multiple skills, depending upon their interest. Independence, so that they can start determining that I can make a difference in my own life and in others' lives. And then generosity, that chance to give back to the community, to their families, and beyond that into other areas. So currently, this was last year's numbers. We have 356 youth enrolled. At the old days, we used to do grades, and now we're broken down into age groups. So I'm still flipping back and forth, and sometimes forget. So we are working with 5-year-olds through roughly 19-year-olds. As long as they have not graduated high school, they can still be in the program for that 19th year. If we have developmentally challenged, they can make it all the way through 21.
You guys are involved with the robotics in the schools?
I am not. I have in the past worked with some of them, mentored some of the teachers that are working with it. Yeah. We actually started our robotics program back in 2008, and then working with some of the teachers, and I did some outreach to some of the other communities and members, and finally Grants Pass School District put money aside to say that the teachers could be stipend in order to teach, and that they would have enough money to buy materials for every classroom that wanted to do it. And that was, I think, 2 years ago. And so that's what kind of suddenly
it's
we
changed,
jumped.
Yeah,
we all of a sudden in 1 year had 20 teams down here.
Wow.
And I called the people up north that actually put on the tournaments and everything. I said, you better be prepared, you know, because we're going to have a whole bunch more teams. We may need another tournament and so on for ours. So, yeah, it's really grown, and we've got some of the principals have really gotten involved, and it's really cool to not have to travel so far to be able to
do that. Are you talking about radio-controlled robots, actual robots that do things?
They're robots that the kids build together. It's out of a kit called Lego Mindstorms, and basically they program the robot with software that comes with the kit, and they have a big 4-foot by 8-foot table that has missions on it that they have to do. And so they put the robot on push-go, and the robot has to go do these missions within a certain time limit. Beyond that, the other cool thing about the program is that they have a research project based on whatever the theme is. And they have to do research on it and then present it to a team of judges.
So they get to build Legos with the robot. It's
yeah,
very cool.
It is really sweet. And then there's a step up for the high school kids. We really get into more. Do you remember Erector Sets when you were growing up?
What is it?
Erector Sets?
Oh, yeah.
Yep. Very similar. It's a thing called Tetrix. And
we had a little hand crank generator to run our dog.
Yeah. So for the high school kids, it's more along that line. And they're using Java in order to program. And they have a little cell phone that sits on the robot and a little cell phone in their hands. And that's how they control it. And so, yeah, it's very cool. So, and then last year we had 82 volunteers, 21 clubs. We also had the special interest things like a livestock judging team, which then went from county to county and practiced at some of the other county livestock judging contests during fairs, and then participated in the state contest during the year. Those are my robotics kids from my two teams. I actually have the club. So I have an elementary middle school team and then the high school team. And part of the high school team's one of the things they have to do is outreach to others, so they actually mentor the younger kids. And so, you know, within our group when we meet, it's like, if you got a question, you go ask them first, don't come ask me. And so they're supposed to be helping them develop their skills as well.
I've always wanted to, and the mayor, and I know, and we've been talking about it for a long time, but having like a drone Olympics, hosting a drone Olympics and a robotic Olympics would
mm-hmm.
probably be another, you know, just to bring people to Southern Oregon
mm-hmm.
for robotic and drone Olympics. You have to do certain things with a drone and whatnot.
Yeah, we introduced that this last year. Our National Science Day for 4-H was drone discovery. And we actually have a little drone. The kids got to play with that, and also remote controls, and also built some out of some styrofoam with a camera attached so that they could kind of get the idea of all of that. So a lot of cool stuff going out there in tech land, and we're, you know, hoping to slowly bring it back in. Shooting sports, we had 19 youth out of our program. That's one of our largest programs. We usually have around 50 kids enrolled. 19 of them actually qualified to go on to the state tournament and compete there for a spot at nationals.
What shooting sports do you type? firebirds and...
Rifle, pistol, shotgun, muzzle loading, and a program called Oregon Western Heritage, which is action shooting. Yeah. But it is a little different since it is kids. We don't allow them to draw from holsters. It's basically the placement of the firearms, and they move station to station, and that's what gets timed. So, yeah.
You ever have any Olympians?
We actually, in the state, had a young lady I heard up north who was training for the Olympics.
That's pretty awesome.
In rifle. So, and whether she made it or not, I hadn't actually heard. But yeah, so that is kind of cool. So the chance to develop mastery in some or multiple project areas, these are currently the project areas that we offer, that we have volunteers willing to work with the kids on. Those are the different areas. All of those, you can develop it here, and then, you know, if you do really well, you get a chance to go on and show what you've done up at State Fair. And in some cases, like I said, you know, with some of our teams, you get to qualify to go on to national competitions.
And this is all that we're doing in Josephine County?
Currently, those are all the project areas that we are offering in Josephine County. And again, basically, we tell people, if you can come up with five kids and two adults that want to learn something, we'll make a club out of it.
Okay.
Like Curry County, they have a surf club, which I think is pretty cool. So depending on what's offered in here, surfing club.
Okay.
So they teach the kids surfing. So our object is to hook the kids with something they're interested in, to get them into our environment so we can do all the other magic.
Are there many extensions to, or homeschools, kids involved?
We have a lot of homeschool kids involved. Yes, we do. And the nice thing about them is that their timing is a whole lot more flexible than the kids that are in school and in sports, where, you know, we've only got this little, with the homeschool kids, it's a little more flexible. We can get them sometimes during the days if we're doing things. Whereas everything else is relegated to evenings and weekends, and again, between certain seasons of sports.
So something that I'm going to probably push as a priority for the next year is integrating honeybees into the programs as much as possible in that education component of it.
Mm-hmm.
Integrate what?
Honeybees.
Good idea.
We actually do have a master beekeeper, is that what they're called, program, and they do meet at our extension office on a monthly basis. And one of the things that we told them when they came on to ask for space was, you need to at least do some education every year in order to be able to utilize our space, because it is a program out of OSU.
Yeah, I spoke to the Southern Oregon Beekeepers Association last year, and it seemed like there was an interest in kind of get the kids involved and stuff.
I think it's a lot more important than it people realize. Mm-hmm. I've got some friends of mine that are beekeepers, and you know, if the bees don't do their thing, I'm sorry. We get real hungry real fast.
We're in real trouble.
Yeah.
And we do actually have, annually, there is a beekeeping essay contest, which is nationwide, that 4-H is involved in. And so we encourage the kids to come up with an essay, and they always have, again, a theme and something they're supposed to write on every year. And then they are awarded at the state level. They pick the top couple, and they go on to nationals, and then get scholarships out of that.
It'd be really interesting. I don't know if they teach woodshop anymore in the local high schools, but to integrate. I know it's kind of expensive to get into. You know, it's a couple $100 for one of those boxes and things, and you buy the bees. But if they can build the boxes in a woodshop program, then have those available for people if you wanted to.
Well, there are other ways besides the wood, so
sure.
You know, straws and all that I've seen, depending upon the things you're using. So,
well, on that note, at the food pantry, the Rock Food Pantry, the bins that we were holding our food in were kind of cardboard based. Well, North Valley High School's wood shop volunteered and made us some new boxes and such. So, I mean, there could even be some partnerships to help the kids.
Yeah.
That mentorship opportunity with some high schoolers, maybe helping some youngers.
Absolutely. Did you say North Valley?
North Valley.
Okay, I'll have to talk to them out there.
If you need a name, I can get it. As far as the teacher that
was doing it, yeah. So mastery, this is kind of the reported workshop hours that I've had from all of the volunteers. And again, like most people, they hate doing paperwork. So I'm going to say this is probably underrepresented of the number of hours that are offered in each of these different project areas. Again, it depends. You can see the largest number there is shooting sports. Because, again, they operate quite often. We have a number of volunteers that work every time they work. So I can't see what some of the other ones are from here. But anyway, that's in your packet there to kind of give you a rough idea. So typically, there's going to be more than one person too. So this, you know, if you're looking at man hours, it's going to be three or four times that at least, if not more, man hours that are put in to put on workshops. And again, this only includes what they're doing within the clubs. And we do clinics throughout the year, which combines a lot of clubs, other workshops, and they don't even track time. You know, if they're going in working with a kid one on one, so there's just it's really hard to kind of figure out how many hours that really is.
Do you work well with the, I guess, Gilstream County Sports Association is where you have your...
That's where the shooting sports is, yes.
And that's working out okay?
It's working out fantastic. They are a great partner. We actually do a regional training down here to train other adults to train kids. I'm actually the coordinator for that. So first weekend in March is when we take volunteers from around the state that want to learn a discipline to work with kids, and we train them here. And again, I hear from all over the state this is one of the best parks in the state.
It is.
People are coming down here. So.
It's a huge success for Josephine County.
Absolutely.
Is a sports park out there.
Absolutely.
I don't know if I can get out there enough.
So on our independence, basically these are ways in which the kids can begin to assert their independence. They get to be club officers, run business meetings. They choose what is interest to them. You know, and we're hoping that they'll try a number of different things before they settle on one thing to really go in depth on. They have the opportunity to determine what they want to exhibit county fair. Last year there were 1,974 county fair exhibits. 96 qualified and decided to go on to state. They actually get the choice whether to send those on to state or not. So some economic things involved with we normally do not have any of our livestock go on to state. I've heard it just gets too expensive to have the haul up there and then to have to keep their animals up there before they come home. And again, a lot of them have more at home that they have to take care of. So it's like, you know, how do we decide to go or not? Also opportunities to choose other activities beyond, you know, where they're practicing their leadership and citizenship. I have my youth council, which is counterpart to the association, and they are also part of the advisory council to the association. We do a summer conference. This year is our 100th summer conference up at OSU, so there's going to be a lot of hoopla about that. We do have some alumni that have gone up in past years when they were in 4-H, so we're trying to gather some old photos to send up to do some this is then, this is now, and what have we done and how have we grown. It's supposed to be a really good session this next year. Experiencing citizenship, it's a chance for kids here. And again, it's not just for 4-H'ers. We open it up to all youth to go up to Salem. It's a 3-day event, comes over spring break. They go on a Sunday, come back on a Wednesday. And they actually work with different departments up there who come up with questions that they would like kid input on. And it's like the Department of Education, Department of Transportation, Health and Human Services, Fish and Wildlife. And they give these questions to the kids, and they spend the next couple of days doing research, coming up with their thinking on it. And then the very final day, these people from the departments at the state level come and have a lunch with them. And they do a presentation for them, and then they sit around the table with their groups and talk to them about it. So it's their chance to really engage in the government within our state and see, you know, how things happen. It is counterpart to what goes on at a national event, which is called 4-H National Conference. And we typically send 3 kids from our state, which is funded by the state, to go and do the same thing up there, but at a bigger national level. So, and I'm hoping, because I kind of went up and took, Benton County actually does a Know Your County Government, and I went up and watched them do it, and how they get their kids participating in what's going on in the county. So I'm probably going to be talking to you guys over the next year.
That's one of the things one of our goals is people don't know what county government does. We're kind of caught in the middle. They hear the state stuff and the city stuff, and they never hear what's going on in the Marble Hall. So I think we'd welcome that.
Excellent.
This commissioner would, I don't know what the counterparts are.
Oh, I think they probably would.
Do you want to do it on and tell them no.
Okay. So, as for generosity, again, I asked them to report on this. I don't think, obviously, it's not capturing everything, but this is roughly what came up last year with man hours and all the different things that they do. Got quite a few things in it because it was a little piece of this, a little piece of that. It was just too much to kind of list out what all those were. So I kind of just tried to capture them in that particular area.
Well, and those are the events that as a youth in this community stand out to me. I helped build the playground at Highland and at Riverside Park, and so those things stay with you as you get older, and So I love that you're doing this. The more they can be focusing on giving back to the community, the less they're going to be harming the community.
Exactly. And all of them do keep, you know, records on even their own personal. This is basically more club-based and, you know, what the clubs have done together as a group. But all the kids do their own kind of thing as well. And that doesn't even get captured here. So there's many, many hours there.
The raising pigs for the gospel rescue?
One of the clubs actually raised, and I'm not sure how many, for gospel rescue that they donated. So they had, you know, extra. And so as a club, they decided to do that as an outreach. Yeah, that was pretty cool.
And then the cemetery cleanup?
There's different clubs have taken on different cemeteries around the county that they actually go in and clean up once a year and try and maintain a little bit. So.
Granite Hill is the challenge for us. So if you know of a club who wants
to do that, okay.
Be really helpful.
That'd be a great one.
Huh? Center in our parks department, right across your parking lot.
Okay. And then another countywide thing that we do every year is called our Stockings for Soldiers. You've probably seen it in the newspaper. And Chamber jumped in this year. We became a member of Chamber and really helped us raise money to be able to make that happen. So we had 380 holiday stockings that went out this last
year. That's wonderful. One of the things you might pass along is volunteering in our Parks Department. For 8 hours, a person will get their annual daily pass. So
okay.
If there were youth that are interested in doing that,
yeah, we actually had a bigger contingent go to the tree planting this year,
okay.
too. So we're trying to
good.
Remind
that's
them that it's there,
good.
And we really want them to partake in that on that Saturday.
Yeah,
so.
That's separate,
yeah.
but yeah.
Yeah, so that was a really cool thing, too. So I was glad to see more kids doing that. All right. So these are some of the life skills that we're hoping the kids are going to take away, you know, and this is what we work at behind the scenes.
Your 4 inches.
Yes.
Figured it out.
Exactly. So that was how one of the ladies in the program broke it down many years ago, and we've all thought, oh, this is a really great way to represent it. So it actually, when we show this, it looks like an eyeball and it's broken out all around the clover. So let's see here. Career exploration. So this is one of the ways the kids, they obviously have all these role models. These are many of the different jobs that are volunteers have, and so the kids get, you know, one-on-one from them. Many of them are 4-H alumni and have served as kids and kind of, you know what their path is like. It's really hard getting information from them. Sometimes I'll sit down and say, okay, you know, how has being in 4-H helped you now as an adult? And they'll sound a lot, would you guys just write this down for me so that I can kind of pass this on and show what impact 4-H has really had? Because, you know, that's really the essence of what we have for the impact of 4-H is, you know, each person's story that comes up. And so we are trying to work more. We have a really great lady up at the state office now who's been doing, coming up with a new model for the program and how it works and how everything we do contributes to the thriving of youth. And they're coming up with some really good research questions. They just ran the first one this last fall, so we're going to be looking to see how that came out. Hopefully you guys, I did bring you by the report for 4-H for the state. And left it in the front. Hopefully each one of you got it. There's a little bit written in there, but we're going to have some more stuff that's going to be coming out on that.
There was supposed to be an alumni questionnaire, too, that was for calling or something. Or
it's actually, if you go on the national website and sign up as an alumni, all they're asking for is where were you an alumni, where are you now located, and I think maybe an email address or something.
Okay.
So it's very minimal, but it's just so that then they're going to let us know who's still living in our area so that we can reconnect with them. Yeah. So then, obviously, you know, the kids that are out, this is what we're finding out, some of the things that they're doing and how being associated with 4-H has impacted their choice of where they're going and so on.
Well, I see this as an opportunity because you'd be akin to the Eagle Scout.
Uh-huh.
You'd be surprised at how many Eagle Scouts that you know that are in Aaron Kubik, city manager. He was an Eagle Scout. And you talk to people that are now easy.
No, I just wondered if that's where you got the sharp ties and socks.
But just you know, like for instance, Simon Hare, 4-H. You know, he should be touting that. That he's a guy that was in 4-H, went through the entire 4-H program, and look where he ended up today.
Uh-huh.
So
and we have a lot of Eagle Scouts in our program, too. I just went to one a week ago, so.
Right.
Do you track, as an educational group, how many of your kids are going on to college?
No, unfortunately.
How about high school completion rates?
Some of that they do, and, you know, you guys were talking about Open Campus, and one of the programs is at Juntos. And they are definitely tracking because they're finding out that, and I believe it's really close to 100% of the kids that are in that program do go on to college.
And
they're really focusing them on this is the path we want you to take and getting them all the help for them. Yeah.
I would imagine with some of our rural areas and more economically depressed areas that taking part in the program like 4-H may be one of the only things keeping that kid hopeful or engaged.
Yes.
Are there scholarships for kids that are not able to financially afford feed and all that other kind of stuff?
Not really. And that's something, you know, I would like us to look at doing. They can get help. They can get loans for animals when they purchase them in case something happens. They can get loans, I believe, through the Farm Credit Service for a certain amount. If they come up with a business plan for how they want to run it, then they obviously have to repay the loan. So there are those kinds of things, but not within the program itself. We don't have a way right now to fund kids to be able to take on a program or such. And so, you know, the cheapest one right now, if you're going to get into a market animal, would be the goat. And we've only had it for 2 years now, the meat goat program.
I just wouldn't know what to do with it.
I would need it. Just get to my mom and she'll put it up. That's pretty good. She likes, you know, going
new
online
things?
And looking up recipes and stuff. So it's been excellent so far.
As they say, she told you when you were eating, right? Wasn't a surprise.
Oh, I don't care. It doesn't matter.
Okay.
I grew up on my tweet.
But as Oregon State University, don't you have somewhere in 4-H that you say, yeah, we'll help you to get a Pell Grant, for instance, or something of that sort? I mean, are there no connections?
For the kids, no.
Not at this level. There could be something of like an endowment that we could set up through the foundation that would be a scholarship opportunity. I think that's an excellent idea, Lily, that you know, there needs to be this the resource in reserve for not scholarships, but a revolving loan fund.
Mm-hmm.
Makes a lot of sense.
Sure, if they got the fee ahead of time when it sells, it reimburses the cost or something.
Yeah.
But I grew up dirt poor, but for me, getting into music was one of those things, and I got, you know, gifted going to the symphony and stuff like
mm-hmm.
that, and it was had lasting impact. And
well,
I
used to be a lot cheaper to get into it too.
Oh yeah,
it wasn't nearly as expensive.
Yeah. $50 versus $350. So.
Yeah,
it's amazing. And we have one award that we do have for a swine kid first year that gives him $300 towards an animal and project and feed, but it costs a whole lot more than that to stay in it. So
could the county sponsor one, or is that
no? It's totally possible. I was actually thinking of our forestry program being you know, a small portion of that tailored towards youth being a foundational member of the scholarship opportunity revolving loan fund. Does that make sense?
You know, it would be interesting to see about connecting our youth shelter with a 4-H program, or even Hearts with a Missions youth shelter with 4-H as opposed.
To kind of get on a tangent for just a second,
mm-hmm.
we've decided that we've more than tripled our revenues here.
Yes, I know. She's got to get out of here.
We more than tripled our revenues from our forestry program in the county, and those are going to be dedicated towards the shelter facility when we reopen it, the detention facility. But there could be a small portion of resources set aside for either purchasing livestock at the 4-H Junior Livestock Auction that would go to the youth shelter for meals, and maybe we'll figure out a revolving loan fund or something for kids to do that too. That would be pretty cool.
Well,
I like the idea of integrating the shelter with the 4-H youth junior livestock, because there's FFA too, right? Don't we still have one program?
I just think the more we get our kids involved, the more that
they have their own way out.
Well, I think their high school graduation rate for 4-H people, and certainly FFA is like probably way up there.
Higher.
Much, much higher than the 60.
I'm sorry we've talked so much. I know we have to let
it's okay, because Kara's got to get out of here for a meeting. So anyway, that was about the end of my thing anyway. So there's our four ages that had hearts, hands, and health. And
great.
And you guys know how to contact me if you have any other cool and great ideas.
Thanks.
So thank you very much.
Mm-hmm. Are you guys at Gladiola as well?
I think
we are
going to tell you about that.
I
Yes,
how are you? Good morning.
Young, you're laughing. What's your first name?
Dan.
Dan. And how are you?
Well, I know I've met you before, and I've met your family.
Yes. Now, were you the one up at the health department?
No, nope. That's me.
That's you. That's it. You know, you meet so many people, you're like, I don't know.
So I'm Karen Pleasant. I'm picking up with my dad, and I work with the Master Gardeners here in Johnson County. So usually John has to do this program for me because this is a part-time job for me, and I teach at the community college the other part-time. So.
What time do you
but
have
I'm here today. Well, it's a different meeting. I have to be too as soon as I can. So.
Okay.
Anyway, so the Master Gardener program is a huge program in this county, and partly because it's a retirement community. We have a lot of people that just love the Master Gardener program and dedicate some over 1,000 hours a year to the Master Gardener program. So the mission of the Master Gardener program is education. The whole thing was started in the mid-70s in Washington State because they felt they had such a need for people coming in to ask their horticulture agents gardening questions, home gardening questions, and they just couldn't meet the need. So one of them came up with this idea, let's train people to answer those home gardening questions. And so from Washington State, it spread to Oregon pretty quickly in the late 70s and has been here ever since. And now it's in every state in the union plus some international places. South Korea has a really big program going in Canada. And this summer, for the first time in probably over 30 years, there's an international Master Gardener conference in Portland. So it's a really big deal that everyone's involved in, and people are coming from all over the United States and other countries to this event. So it's a 5-day
wow.
event with, you know, world-renowned speakers. And
very cool.
Yeah, it's very cool. So anyway, we have over 300 Master Gardeners in Josephine County that do a tremendous variety of outreach activities to youth and to adults to answer those home gardening questions. So we focus on anything related to home gardening, be it orchards or just vegetable gardening, flower gardening, landscaping, anything home gardening related.
My grandmother was in the Master Gardeners before she passed away, so.
There we go. Oh, she was? Yeah, okay, maybe that's where I first ran into her. Oops.
Oh, no, my other grandmother. She's
oh, okay. So to become a Master Gardener, people sign up to go through the training, and every year we do training, which is ending in April. Starts in January, it goes for about 13 weeks, and typically they pay back 1 hour for every hour they are trained. And so they're trained for like 76 hours this year, and they're paying back 70, so it's close. So it's a wonderful service.
What do they do to pay them?
And I'll show you a lot of different programs coming up. They do any of the youth programs. They do adult gardening programs. We have a plant clinic that they work in to answer gardening questions that people bring in plants that have issues. They're wondering what insect is bothering it, or you know what virus or fungus or whatever is going on with it. But so they go through a massive training, and I bring speakers down that are experts in those topics from Oregon State. So we cover anything from just learning how to identify plants, to vegetable gardening basics, to pesticide use, to integrated pest management, everything related to soils, everything related to gardening, so that they have a very strong knowledge base. And so the textbook we use is the one that's used statewide in Oregon, and it's been used since 2008, but they're just finishing up at Oregon State the new textbook, and hopefully we'll be able to start using that next year, which is really exciting to get a new textbook. This one's been wonderful. But so once a person goes through the training and they do their volunteer hours, then they become, and they have to do a take-home test too, they become a certified Master Gardener. And then to continue that and be recertified every year, they only have to do 10 hours of continuing ed and 20 hours of volunteer service. So that keeps them recertified and continuing their learning.
Do you have a soil testing? I've got one spot on my creek bank that nothing grows, period.
We have information.
Well, it's got to be some kind of soil, and I have no idea how to test it.
Well, we have a lot of decomposed granite in Johnson County, so maybe that at play. But anyway, we have soil testing information. We don't do soil testing right at the extension office, but we can send you in the right direction,
okay.
Which is one of the things the plant clinic does. So, okay, so let's go on to the next. I'm not used to using this little ruler. There we go. So one of the main purposes is having the plant clinic, and it's manned 4 days a week from April through October by Extension Master Gardener volunteers, and then we have it open 2 days a week from November through March. So we have people come in tremendously with some spring in plants, and they just want to know what's in the yard. They just moved here, and they go, I don't know what any of these plants are. Can you help me figure them out? others bringing plants that have issues, and they want to know, you know, what they can do to help with it. And so it provides a really important service. And again, like John was talking about, we can't answer any questions related to mushrooms, as far as identifying mushrooms, because that's just not something we do. We're a home garden based, and that's too dangerous of a topic. And we don't answer questions related to anything marijuana related, although people have tried to get us to. And as they go through, we have this series of things that we ask them, and as we go through that, it becomes evident that's what they're aiming for. And so we go, sorry, we can't.
Tomatoes.
Right.
If he wants you to take a different picture of her, that's not a real good likeness of her.
How you go with that? So anyway, we have a tremendous resource. We have computers in there. We have one whole wall of books. We have tremendous resources for the volunteers, and so they do a lot of research. They take all the information in. It can be phone calls, emails, or visits to the office.
This is not on Ring yet?
Yes, yep. We have the office right there. And so usually, you know, they take all the information in, and then they get back to the person with, you know, recommendations about what they can do within 24 hours usually. So they give them an array of options. It's not like you can only do one thing, and they let the person choose. So pesticides is always the last choice. They go for integrated pest management, other cultural, mechanical, different things you can do to take care of the issues instead. Sorry about that. So in the summer, from April through October, we're at the Growers Market. Have you guys ever seen them there? So again, this is our portable plant clinic, and they take information, and they have a lot of brochures and information available to give to the public, you know, what are the best tomatoes to grow in this area? I mean, just all kinds of questions. And so they take that in, and any problems that people are having, they take all the information down and then bring it back to the main plant clinic, because they just don't have all the resources there to answer everything right on the spot. So it's been a really amazing service. Last year we had over 1,100 contacts at the plant clinic, you know, people coming in with issues and questions that they had. So, and I want to talk to you about blue orchard bees, the mason bees, the native bees. They pollinate way more than honeybees, and they're really easy to attract and have. So, yeah. Oops, I'm going back. I'll get the hang of this. There we go. So community education is a big part of our program. And when I started in 2013, we offered just 6 community ed classes. That's just usually at the extension office, but sometimes other places, a year. And now we are doing about 35 community ed classes a year. We shoot for 2 or 3 a month, depending on the instructors and what the needs are and what people want to teach. So a lot of master gardeners do some of the instruction, and then we have other experts come down from Oregon State and other places to teach instruction. So usually about 60% of the people, because I've been keeping the data, that attend the community ed classes are public people getting educated about gardening topics. And the other 40% are master gardeners who need continuing ed hours for recertification. So it's been a really great way to reach the public. And have you guys ever heard of Seeds of Spring? It's the annual gardening conference we do one day a year at Rogue Community College. And so it's usually the first or second Saturday in March. So that just finished. And we have anywhere between 150 and 300 people attend that. And we offer about 30 to 40 classes that they can choose from. And so they just take up the whole campus and go over and take gardening classes. So that's a really great event. And people come from other areas here to take that as well. So we do a lot of youth programming, and we have school gardens at 10 of the local schools. Some of them are more active than others. It kind of always depends on our volunteer base. And we've had a couple of the main people that were really involved in school gardens move during the last year or so, and so we're kind of working hard to fill in that gap. But one of our best school gardens is at Highland Elementary, and they got a grant 2 years ago, actually, to put in a greenhouse. Have any of you seen a greenhouse up there? Drive by Highland and see the greenhouse. You can see it from the road.
Yeah.
So they have a very active group. They offer, the garden is open to students to come usually at lunch. Different schools work differently. Some send their kids like 2 at a time during class time if they've done, like earned that special privilege. And other ones just have it open during lunchtime, and the kids can go there and work in the garden. But they have a really great program going, and they have the PTA involved with them at Highland. And then North Middle School, because it's nearby, was sending students over to help in the garden, and they've since started their own little garden in this fenced-in area that they have. So they've got a really viable program going. So we have a garden at Gladiola where we do, they kind of run the garden, but we come in and do the educational component. So some schools were involved from the ground up, depending on what the needs are, and other schools we just go in and as master gardeners teach the kids about gardening. And so, and then we've partnered with Family Community Health a little bit this year to do Growing Healthy Kids, which Cheryl will probably talk more about. So we have some master gardeners working with that program that they have a grant for. So they do a lot of really great things. And then this year, well, we partnered with 4-H already to do some of the K-12 programming. We've tried having like a club meet in the summer, because the hardest thing is the kids plant the garden in the spring and then they're gone during the summer, and then they can come back in the fall to harvest it. But how do we keep everything viable and growing and everything during the summer? So we've had different things happening, and sometimes it's just the master gardeners are the kind of keeping things going. Some of the schools have tried having school 4-H clubs there in the summer, and so it's just kind of a potpourri of each school is unique and different. But this year, there's a program called Junior Master Gardeners, which is a really neat program developed by Texas A&M, and we're trying to incorporate that and get a program going here. And it's really neat because it's kind of like a Boy Scout. They have a handbook, but it's a gardening handbook, kind of like a Boy Scout manual, and it has everything about gardening you can imagine that goes over like a 9-month period, and the students do a different topic every month, and after they finish those topics, they get a little pin that's depicting whatever that topic was, and then they do a community service project at the end, and they become a certified junior master gardener. Mm-hmm. So that's something Sue and I have been talking about forever. We're going to get it going this year. We're really excited about that, and we think we'll probably do a pilot project at Highland School just because they have such an active program there, and they have the greenhouse, which would make it easy to do as an after-school program. So, and then we were working with Grass Pass High School in their special ed garden that they have, too, that their special ed students work in. And then we have the Young Master Gardener program at the library, and this was started about 7 years ago now. The person that started it ran it for like 5 years, and then she moved up to McMinnville, but we have other master gardeners that have taken it over. But they do a program once a month, and they have a special theme, and in the morning they have the itty-bitty kids, like 5 and under, and then they had a homeschool group in the middle of the day, and then they had an after-school group after school. And this year they've consolidated the homeschool and after-school group together, but they have a tremendous active group of volunteers that are involved there and kids that come there. And so they have stations set up usually that depict the theme, like water-wise gardening was in September, looking at plant families was in October. They've done soils, they've done, you know, hydroponics, how to grow plants, you know, water-based, just, you know, attracting pollinators, everything. And the kids just love it. They always involve getting free books. They always take plants home. It's a really great program. And so we've partnered with the library to do that. They help advertise and do some of the funding for it, too. Every year, the major fundraisers, so we have a Master Gardener Association, which was started at the state level, the Oregon Master Gardener Association, and there's different chapters in the counties around the state. And their main purpose was to do fundraising to help support the Master Gardener program. And so we have a very active Master Gardener Association, and this is one of their main fundraising events. They do a spring garden fair every year. Have you guys ever been to that big plant sale? So we have greenhouses at the extension office in the back. And that's part of the training. As people go through the Master Gardener program, they're helping grow things in the greenhouses, and then they sell all that at the Spring Garden Fair, and that's one of the major fundraisers of the year. So 2 years ago, we started the Seed to Supper program in conjunction with a community food bank, the Josephine County Community Food Bank at Raptor Creek Farms. This is actually a statewide program, and this was developed in the metro area with the Oregon Food Bank. So they developed this textbook that's just about vegetable gardening, and it's geared towards people gardening on a budget, like low-income, SNAP-ed type people. But other people can take it too. But they learn everything. It's in a beautiful book that has lots of great illustrations in it. And they learn everything about, you know, how to plant their garden, how to harvest it, and then what to do with it too, because a lot of people grow broccoli or whatever, and they go, okay, what do we do with it? So it includes all that. So we have an active group of volunteers that are working towards teaching Seed to Supper in Grants Pass, and then we have another few that are doing it in Illinois Valley. So that's been working really good. And we're trying to reach out more to the Hispanic population and trying to reach them and get them involved too. So that's one of our goals this year. So in 2016, we had 300 volunteers. 53 went to Master Gardener training, and I think that year 49 finished, and 3 earned what we call just a horticulture certificate, which means they didn't get certified. They just they just took the training and then they weren't able to finish for health reasons or whatever. But they donated over 15,000 hours, which is tremendous. They're just, they're everywhere around the community doing things. So you guys have seen them, I'm sure. The plant clinic answered 1,100 inquiries. We had over 3,600 public contacts. Over 630 youth received programming through the school gardens and the Young Master Gardeners. And then about 750 adults attended the educational programs.
So, real quick, Karen.
Sure.
I have this idea since I took office 6 years ago that the Master Gardeners would adopt this campus and not to supplement the care or anything, because we would always have somebody who mowed lawns and such. But I feel like there's a huge opportunity to integrate the Master Gardeners with this being like the front yard of Josephine County. And it's never, I probably need to do more than just make a suggestion, apparently.
Right.
I need to come to the Master Gardeners and say, you know, the county would pony up whatever kind of resources it takes for doing the plants. But having it kind of like Oregon State's campus, where you walk all over, and there's these little decals that tell you what this kind of plant is. And it could be the illustration for anybody who moves here and says, what do you want to do? How could you landscape? I just feel like there's a lot of opportunity here.
Yeah, we have a huge front yard.
And it's,
yeah, you do. Yeah.
It's not been, people have not been receptive to that somehow.
Okay.
And
well, it's definitely something to think about. The Master Gardener Association people decided they wanted to put a demonstration garden in at the extension office. And so in front of the auditorium, it's all marked out. They're going to be taking out a lot of the pavement and putting in raised beds that are adaptive gardening, you know, related to somebody in wheelchairs or like maybe that's older and can't bend low. So they've got all these plans. I could have brought that to show you, I didn't think of it. But they've got all these plans about creating that and getting that developed into a demo garden, plus the tiny little plots that we have there already. And I know we helped put in a Firewise garden up at the Hillcrest Fire Station. And, you know, they've done different little bits and pieces around town. But it's a matter of volunteer power.
Well, it sounds like you have it.
Yeah.
I find it, I don't want it to be challenging from a standpoint, but that facility is the county's. It's being donated for free.
Right.
So I don't feel like it's that much to ask and a huge opportunity for the Master Gardeners to say, here's our front yard. You don't have to do anything. I want you to just do what you can to take on this front of the courthouse. And I almost want to say, I don't want any more stuff being done out at OSU Extension until something is integrated into a phenomenal opportunity to showcase. Let's put a big sign out there that says, you know, maintained by Josephine County Master Gardeners. Nobody goes by Ringette. Not that often.
Yeah.
Unless they're going there because they're already interested in the Master Gardeners. But here's a huge opportunity. And it just feels like, why isn't this happening?
Yeah. Well, part of it, I think, is just that we have to keep our mission of being educational, and we could definitely make it educational.
That's the whole point.
So, yeah.
Because, I mean, it's fine the way it is, and it could be actually challenging having people who want to do things in an area that may not be conducive to that, but I feel we could work those things out. It just seems like a huge opportunity.
Yeah, definitely has potential. So. But we do get called by a lot of groups, would you come and landscape and maintain our landscape? And I go, that's not our purpose.
Yeah.
Our purpose is educational, but to make it a demonstration kind of educational thing, like a fire.
Yeah, somebody asked about a certain plant to say, we have that right in front of the
courthouse. Yeah.
Come take a look.
Right.
Plants that grow well in this environment. Yeah, definitely has a lot of potential. Let's explore that for sure.
Well, let's. I'm not going to be here for more than 10 months.
The
goal. And so before I leave, I want that integrated. Somehow, the Master Gardeners has got to figure out a way that there's a 3x5 either patch of ground out here that they're showcasing.
Yeah.
And there's a sign out there that says Master Gardeners. It seems like not that much to ask.
Yeah.
That we would have that kind of integration with the Master Gardeners.
Okay. So any comments from you, John?
Priority.
Any comments from you?
One.
We'll work on it.
Okay.
I don't recall that being.
It's probably tangential to.
But yeah. I've had lots of conversations with the Master Gardeners looking for logical places to have demo gardens.
The library.
And we kind of ended up putting them coming up with some designs for out there at Ringette because that was the space we had available.
Yeah.
So here in front.
Well, I don't want to take away from what Ringette's doing because I think that makes a logical sense when people are coming there specifically for Master Gardener 4-H. That is great. This gets a tremendous amount of traffic by there's 60 people that'll be coming over.
So I don't chat about logistics.
Yeah, definitely.
Where things will be stored, what resources are available, things
definitely.
Of that nature. But if you want to have
Ryan Johnson, our facilities guy, wants to do this.
I think there'd likely be volunteers if we jump at that. So
I would think so. It shouldn't be overwhelming, and we'll maintain it. We already do.
So
it's just an element of design, whatever educational opportunity for the. There's 100,000 people that walk by
this
in a year, at least.
It has a lot of potential. Definitely. We'll work on it.
When I was at the city, they did that little triangle out there on ENF Street was one of our goals. And I wanted them to take it. I'm on the tree advisory committee over there. I wanted them to take their trees that they suggest for grants passed. You know, the trees for residential areas and stuff, and plant one. They have like 12 different species. Plant one of each one, and then mark them so that you could send somebody. Say, well, I don't know what a Blue Mountain spruce looks like. They say, well, it's tree number 13 out there at ENF. People can pull over and walk through that area and actually see what that tree is going to look like in their front yard someday. And what did we end up with? I think there's four sequoias out there and a bunch of weeds. It was sent through a person in that just didn't see the vision.
Yeah.
And so I just dropped it. But that might be another place if you approach the city to put on some trees out of your forestry division. Say you don't plant a little grove of trees. Make it look Pacific Northwest, not like it's a golf course.
Well, and the city's done that with the Firewise program up at the Hillcrest Station. They have the Firewise examples of what plants can be along the side, and they each have a little plaque.
Yeah, I've seen that.
Yeah. That's really cool. And I mean, just granted, glancing out there, because I never come into front entrance. You know, it's like, what is the potential out here? Obviously, the east facing is not necessarily the best for growing as a west or a south would be, but
is there escaping?
What is the areas that would get some sun at different times or would be best for growing that we could put little plaques and say, this is an Oregon, blah, 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 or this is a, you know. To me, it is a canvas that we could utilize.
Just the highest traffic area in the entire county.
Yeah, I'm sure it is. We have a tree program too, so we have a lot of trees. They're not kept on site at OSU, they're out at a farm just because we don't have room for them.
Yeah.
But we do have a lot of trees. So just in closing, reliable, relevant, and reachable are the goals of the Master Gardener program, and we strive to do that, and this would meet all those.
Cool.
Reliable, relevant.
That'd be great.
All right. Thank you.
Thank you. Sorry about the meeting.
That's okay.
Yeah. Thank you.
Good morning.
Good morning. How are you?
Good. I'm Cheryl.
Yes.
And I've met you.
Yes, absolutely.
Hi.
Good to see you. Yep.
See you.
What parking lot
have you? Oh.
Yeah. So I work with what we call family and community health programs, and we are affiliated with the College of Health and Public Health and Human Sciences at OSU. And one of the large grants that OSU has is to provide SNAP Ed throughout the state. So we have this program in all 36 counties in Oregon, as well as some of the tribal areas. And for this program, we work with key partners. So we don't have people necessarily coming to us. We go out in the community and do our programs. So some of those are the public schools, school food service, Head Start, federally qualified health centers, and food pantries. And we do a combination of things in this program where we teach direct ed. So we go into the classroom and we do series classes. And then we also, in the last 3 years, are charged with being able to do policy systems and environmental change projects. So we can use some of our time to improve the environment to make it easier for children and families to make healthy choices. So that means we can be involved in safe routes to school, school wellness policies, incorporating water bottle filling stations in schools, so a wide variety of things in addition to direct ed.
Are we doing anything locally? I, with all my nieces and nephews in the elementary school area right now, I've gone to a lot of lunches with them.
Yep.
and I'm shocked at how horrendous the food is that we serve in our public schools.
So let me move through my slides. But there, we do work with school food service, and there are one of the things that I'll bring up on one of these slides is that school wellness policy is going to become a hot topic in the next year. The schools have been required to have school wellness policies at the district level. They're kind of rubber stamped by the state, but those will begin to carry more power because they are tied to the Healthy Hunger Free Kids Act, which if they are not in compliance with having school wellness policies, the threat is they could lose funding for their school lunch programs. So there's going to be a lot more of a tie and incentives for schools to comply with all of those wellness policies.
Well, and I want to say one of the presentations we got up in Corvallis was that one of the programs, they were full-on growing foods that they were eating in their lunches. And their, it's like they partnered with growing the very foods that then went into their school, so they knew they were getting healthy foods, and they got the kids on board by, you grew this food, now you're eating this food, and they were excited about it.
Yeah, and to some extent you can do a little bit of that, but one of the programs that operates in Southern Oregon is through Rogue Valley Farm to School. So that's a nonprofit organization that tries to link local farmers with the school food service folks so that they can source some of their product locally.
Is it happening?
It is happening. It's happening. You know, it's growing. It's growing to a greater extent. I know they've made good inroads with Sodexo, which had been a challenging, that's a third-party school food service provider. And that had been challenging, and I think in the last year they've made some good inroads with that group as well. Grants Pass School District purchases some food from local farmers. It's kind of a long process because they need a lot of food. So they need more food than what can be grown in a school garden setting. So I mean, you kind of have to go back and plant in, you know, February or March for maybe what the schools need the following year.
Mm-hmm.
So coordinating those efforts is something that Rogue Valley Farm to School does, and Maud has worked with them as well.
There are definitely some challenges, and part of that has to do with the price point. The schools have very little money per meal, and farmers need to make, you know, they need a certain margin.
Yeah, sure. And transportation issues,
yeah.
And then state purchasing guidelines for the school meal program. So there's a lot of things involved.
It's just shocking how much of their food is frozen out of a bag and yellow. I mean, it's just, or white and yellow. It's just
and
no nutrition.
Schools went through, I mean, there's kind of two ways that schools do food service. It's either, you know, pull it out, low labor cost, higher food costs because they use processed foods. They pull it out of the freezer, they pop it in the oven, and they serve it. Or there's the old school where they have higher labor costs and they actually prepare food from scratch, which we've really gotten away from in the past years because of, you know, labor being higher cost than buying products. So a lot of schools are not set up to do a lot of cooking.
They don't even have knives.
Yeah. Or have, you know, some of the skills. We're partnering.
How did that happen?
It's been happening for 20 years.
Yeah.
It's been happening for a long time. You know,
I remember having better meals when I went through our public school system.
Well, yeah, they made homemade breads and those
kinds
of things, yeah. And we are partnering at the state level with Oregon Department of Ed Child Nutrition Programs, and they are coming and doing regional trainings. There's a chef who is also a registered dietitian in the Bend area, and he's traveling around doing more food skills training with school food service folks. So we have some of those coming up. You know, any opportunity we can get to do that. These are some of the partners that we work with in Josephine County. So you can see there's Head Start, Boys and Girls Club, Siskiyou Outreach Program, which is part of Siskiyou Community Health Center, the WIC program, the Food Bank and Raptor Creek Farm, YMCA, Grants Pass School District, as well as Three Rivers School District and the School Food Services. And this is just a quick graphic on SNAP-Ed, and I don't think I brought them up, but we just got a statewide report on our SNAP-Ed program throughout Oregon. But really, one out of every, or a third 30% of children in Josephine County are food insecure. So we have a high number of families where children don't have enough food to eat on a regular basis. And the SNAP Ed program is charged with working with populations that qualify for the free and reduced lunches. So any Title I schools, which is all of the schools in Josephine County. So that's one of our criteria, which is really nice in our area. It's good and bad. But the nice thing about it is we are not really limited with where we can do programs and who we can serve. So we can go to any school in Josephine County.
Now, and this is a personal experience because it happened to a friend of mine. His daughter and two kids were playing soccer during the summer out of Jell School. Just kicking the ball around. And a lady at lunchtime opened the door and said, "Come on, girls, lunch is ready, come on." And they said, "We didn't come here to eat, we're not hungry, you know, we're just kicking the ball around." She said, "If you don't come in and eat and sign up, you have to leave."
Oh.
Because she was trying to rack up her numbers to say,
her summer
statistic that 1 in 3 kids are starving because they just work those numbers, and before you know it, the program is completely out of control, and the numbers are skewed.
Okay.
And so that's the reservation I have with school food program. And I don't know what hot lunch was like because I ate out of a brown paper sack sandwich that I made at home. The only time I ever got hot lunch in the school was for Thanksgiving.
Okay.
That's it.
So summer food programs are slightly different than the year-round school food programs. And summer food programs don't take any statistics on anybody. They feed any child that comes through who wants to eat. So sometimes they're in a school, sometimes they're in a park. They are often sponsored by the school food service, and the school food service makes the food and transports it to different areas in the community. So Fruitdale has
they have to have some documentation of how many kids they serve in order to figure out how much food they need.
Yes, they would have to project how many kids they're serving. And probably a food service person is making that food. They don't want to see the food go to waste. They want to serve the kids. And I can't speak to the issue of open or closed facilities at the schools in the summer. I know Fruitdale does have a very large fence around the playground area, so it's not like some of our other schools where the playground is an open area that you can just go to any time of the day.
Well, and when they first started it, they went to a couple, they had like 4 locations in the city. They would show up with a van and just hand out sack lunches to any kids that showed up.
They do a variety. Some of them are served in the parks.
Yeah.
So Gilbert Creek Park has done some.
Winston Park was one of them.
Yeah. Yep. Sports Park.
Just to carry on with what Lily was saying about the quality of food and the taste of the food, when I was at a hospital up in Portland, the food was almost non-edible. I mean, I took the lid off of it and had to put the lid back on so you didn't get to see what I had for lunch. And I asked them, as I was leaving, they said, "Well, how was your stay?" And I said, "One thing I think you need to do in your food service program is you are putting out all the meals and say, 'Hey, look at the beautiful meals we're putting out. I want you to look at what comes back from the rooms to see what people aren't eating.' Because if you have beans on the tray that are unedible because they don't taste like beans anymore, and you keep getting back all the beans, and don't serve it again. Don't just keep putting it out
or
like,
change
boy,
the
doesn't this look
it.
Good? Then this
yeah.
look good.
And
I want
you
to monitor what comes back
see that, how
to
much
see
food
what's actually
goes.
Being
yeah.
used. Not to tell you how to do your program.
Well, and honestly, I don't do the food service end of the programs. I mean, those...
You're just doing the nutrition.
We're doing nutrition education. And food service programs in the schools have a lot of criteria that they have to follow and, you know, price points that they have to meet. So... these are really great conversations, and we do our best to have those with the school food service people, but what we really want to do is make them our allies and not you know, not come to them and say, "Gee, you're not doing a very good job at this," because we need to help build on the assets that are there versus, you know, create enemies in the community. And so they've been willing to do some really great things. I think they need to know more about who we are and what we have to offer as well. So here again, SNAP Ed, this shows a little social ecological model, which is what we operate off of for doing community interventions. We have, in this
respect. We have one program that is, I'm wondering if I have, yes, I have notes that come in here. This is the numbers of people we worked with in Josephine County last year. So, but one of the things we have that kind of addresses this school food issue and the whole school environment is there's a what we call the SPANET. It's a school physical activity and nutrition assessment tool. Big, thick notebook. We can go into schools and we talk with the principal, teachers, food service, and we find out what are the policies around all of the school environment having to do with school food service. Are kids taught nutrition in the classroom? How much PE time do they have? All of those factors. We can look at the policies. Then we do the observation and see how is that policy put into practice, and what's actually happening in the school environment. So we've done those assessments. We've just done one in Grants Pass with Lincoln Elementary, and we've done a couple over in Jackson County. And then from that, there are suggestions of things that the schools can do to make improvements. And it's kind of a nice way to go about it because it's not me coming in and just saying, this is my opinion of what you're doing. It's me coming in and saying, we've done this assessment, and here are the things you're doing really great, and here are the opportunities for some change. So it's worked out really well to help identify where some changes can be made in the school environment. And that includes school food, facilities for physical activity, safe routes to school. You know, can the kids ride their bike? Are there bike racks? Yeah, there's bike racks, but there's two bikes in there. Well, that tells me that there really isn't a whole large community of kids riding their bike to school.
There's a different culture about it. When I was a kid, I rode my bike all over town.
Yeah.
And that you get people getting contacted by the police now if their kid in elementary school is unattended. And it's like,
yeah,
what happened? But you can't do that anymore.
And our town is really broken up with a lot of busy streets. I mean, it is fairly difficult to get to most of our elementary schools without going on a real major thoroughfare or busy street. So, but that's part of the whole infrastructure thing that's, you know, bigger than OSU Extension, but part of what we can do as a larger community.
Bicycles don't last long around here either.
Lots of bikes. Yeah. So let me go back once too. Oh, if I can. Nope, I'm just done the previous. Yeah, so, you know, this is our educational contacts in Josephine County last year, and I have two nutrition educators in Josephine County for a total of 1.3 FTE. So we don't have a huge force, so a lot of what we do, we need to be working through this social ecological model or integrating systems approaches to our work. So I'll explain some of those kinds of things that we're doing, because we can't be at every single school or at every single Head Start throughout the region. I also have I have three educators in Jackson County.
So what are the other programs, not to interrupt yours, but that have to speak today?
I'm gonna whip through here.
Farms.
Yep.
Farms. Yeah.
And Karen has some
more.
Yeah.
Farms, so three.
Okay, so let me go through. This is series classes like Karen Pleasant said. We call her Karen with a K because we have Karen
yes.
with a C now, too. But we are working with a Growing Healthy Kids program, which is a garden-based nutrition education using school gardens, attempting to coordinate with master gardeners to help us in those at seven of the elementary schools in Josephine County and across the board in third grade classes. This is our FNET program, which is slightly different than SNAP-Ed, and this is aiming to educate older children and adults. And we worked with 15 adults who went through a 9-series class last year, and then this is just the infographic that shows improved food practices, improved food resource management, nutrition practices, food safety, and physical activity, and fruit and vegetable intake. More importantly, we're working with the middle schools. We're working with both North and South Middle School and integrating nutrition education for all the sixth graders in their health classes.
Do they offer home ec or cooking classes in the schools anymore?
No. The high schools have a food, Adventures with Food, And then you can do some culinary classes if you choose as an elective in high school. But the middle schools don't have it. We do all kinds of events after school, in the parks. There's the kids' dash that...
making margaritas?
Yeah, making margaritas. No, this is our blender bike, which we received through a grant with OSU, and that's been really popular to take out to schools, and lots of people like to have us bring that.
The orange bike.
The orange bike, yeah. One of the other strategies that we're using is kind of getting at this wellness policy in the school from the bottom up, is training teachers and folks in the classroom on how to integrate classroom parties using healthy food instead of cupcakes and cookies and soda brought from Safeway. And, you know, there are health department guidelines that apply to schools, which are that they can't bring food made at home. But that doesn't mean they can't bring ingredients bought from the store and put together recipes of food in the classroom. So that's kind of what this program's all about. And our area of the state, we developed this, and it's integrated. Other SNAP Ed folks are using this around the state. So I just had a creative educator who came up with this strategy. And again, we're hoping to implement this in some of the district trainings at the beginning of the school year. And here's food service, and I'm going to skip this slide because I have it in here twice. We've been out to Raptor Creek the last 2 years with Boys and Girls Club and YMCA, and then coordinating with the farm out at Raptor Creek and doing nutrition education and gardening with children. And last year we had 123 kids participate in that. It's a series, so I think they were out there for 6 to 8 weeks in the summer, taken out on buses. They spend time planting, weeding, watering, and tasting food. Food Hero, you may see, this is something that comes out from campus on a monthly basis, and we focus on foods that are grown in Oregon, and this is kind of a fact sheet that tells people how to shop for, store, and then it contains recipes. So we use this as a base of a lot of our nutrition ed programs for people of all ages, but especially in schools. And Smarter Lunchrooms. So this is a strategy that's out of Cornell University. That's a behavioral training. And last year I did this training with the Grants Pass School District Elementary School Food Service staff. And it's more about marketing healthy choices and how to, they've done studies where if you put healthy food at the beginning of a cafeteria line or the early spot in the restaurant, people are more likely to choose it. You put chocolate milk further down where kids have to reach it, you put the other milk up front, they will choose the other milk. So convenience is a huge factor no matter how old we are. So trying to integrate some of those concepts in so that if the healthy choice is available, people will actually choose it. And then we've done some recipe testing with the schools using whole grains and letting kids be allowed to vote, so kids get to participate with a vote. And this maybe gets to what you're talking about, Dan, where if we offer something healthier and the kids say they like it, then maybe the school food service will serve it. So another example of this is in one area of the state, they did beets. You know, school food service people may say, oh, they'll never eat beets. But the kids actually liked beets and would eat beets, but nobody had presented those to them because of the perception that they wouldn't like it. So if we can kind of showcase things to the school food service in a fun way with the kids having a vote, it might help make some changes.
They got that for me. I don't need
you don't need beets. And then this is what we've worked out with Southern Oregon Head Start. They are regionally based, so they serve all the way from Ashland through Cave Junction in all of their centers. So we try to do systems work with them. We integrate that Food Hero newsletter that gets sent home to the parents each month. And we have been doing training. So each year I'm doing a training with the Head Start cooks and integrating some passports where they get to taste new fruits and vegetables with kids and give the kids a stamp. And we've had kids come with their parents to a class and show their stamps that they got at Head Start. So, you know, it works when you educate children, they tell their parents about things. And then these are some of the other coalition groups that I personally work with for some of my work that's outside of SNAP Ed. So we got that Board of Health where I ran into Lily, Southern Oregon Health Advisory Board member, that's for Head Start. Planting Seeds for the Future is our Raptor Creek Josephine County Food Bank Coalition District 7 Wellness Committee, Pioneering Healthy Communities, and we have a Veggie RX work group, and I think Karen is going to speak a little bit about that. So we're going to lead into Karen. Thanks.
I'm going to direct my final three to be more succinct than my first.
I'm sorry.
No, I think I only have like five slides, because I like to rattle back over and really show pictures.
Whatever you can do in 10 minutes.
10 minutes. Okay, so I am Karen Wheeler. My background is really public health policy. I used to work for Jackson County Public Health, and I also did some work with the Josephine County Health Department. And so I kind of bring that experience into this position, which is brand new. I just started last year.
Bell Shepherd still over?
Bell Shepherd is with the state.
Oh, that's right.
Yeah, yeah. But she is the latest member of our Southern Oregon
SoRec Advisory Board.
Yeah, she just started yesterday.
I remember her.
Yeah. So
her daughter is Lily.
So the program areas that I really work on, I oversee the Master Food Preserver program, the Strong Women program, and then as I'm building out my capacity in my new role, I kind of get to define new FCH areas that I want to work on. Family and Community Health, sorry. So I'm also on the board for the Oregon Public Health Association and for Upstream Public Health, both of which kind of work on that policy systems and environment level. So the one program, Master Food Preservers, we have this both, picture got replicated. So we have programs, I oversee Jackson and Josephine County. Last year our certification training was here in Grants Pass, and we trained 13 new volunteers. 22 volunteers recertified. So there's like there's a certification process, and then there's people who just kind of step in and out of the program and help them like support roles.
Food preservers, or is that like canning and?
It's everything from canning, dehydration, fermentation. We have a hunt to home class in Jackson County next year. Yeah, so we teach like the full gamut, but it also encompasses sort of food safety too, right? So even just basic things like, you know, preventing botulism and baked potatoes, you know. So we have a bunch of different opportunities to engage in the community around food safety and food preservation.
What are your numbers referencing?
Sorry. Okay. So this one, the image on the right is the statewide data, but then the one on the left is, so the stuff on the left
so
is...
So that's the number of Oregon Oregonians that have been down and reached.
That's what we did in Josephine County.
And volunteers.
Yeah, that's what we did in Josephine County specifically, on the right. So the left is statewide, around different things. It kind of just teases the data down to the local level is what I'm demonstrating here. But yeah, so we do everything from pressure gauge testing to, you know, connecting. We're looking at expanding to work with the food pantries to do some cooking skills education around that stuff so people kind of know what to use, from what they're getting.
My mom's a little bit of pressure in
get it tested every year.
Yeah.
Every single year. It's a little unwieldy. Okay, the Strong Women program is really around supporting essentially postmenopausal women in maintaining bone density and strength. To prevent, it's a fall prevention program by and large. One of the things that we're really looking at with this program predominantly is sort of the social aspects. So some of our volunteers have been, or some of the women in these groups have been coming for like 10 to 12 years. And there's a big social network component there. Falls become more hazardous later in life, and so some of our, like, it's everywhere from like 55 to like, I think we have an 83-year-old woman who comes, and so I think one of our volunteers who teaches the program, she's in her 70s, and she bikes into class 3 days a week, bikes back out, and teaches the class, so it's just, it's a great opportunity for these women to connect
and sort of build a better foundation for fall.
Where is it offered?
We offer it at the Ringette Street. It's Monday, Wednesday, Friday. There's two classes. There's one offered at 8 and one offered at 9. So then this program, the veggie prescription program that Cheryl kind of touched on, this was a program started in 2015. In my capacity with the health department, I sort of helped to coordinate and organize the development of it with different systems partners. We are looking to bring it now over to Josephine County. We've had 129 participants to date, 89 people, 67% completion, which is actually pretty high, because you do end up with a lot of people who are lost to follow-up or attrition for different reasons. 57% did increase their fruit and vegetable consumption, and this was not just at the end of this six-week program because we gave them $10 to increase their consumption, but also as a three-month follow-up. And it's really about teaching low-income families how to navigate their food system so they have better access to the resources for sourcing fresh produce. We're working with a group of folks right now in Josephine County, working with All Care Primary Health, Sisking Community Health, Josephine County Public Health. That's the hallway. And then also the Rogue Valley Food System Network, to kind of build out this program here in Josephine County. A lot of it sort of stemmed from the 2013 community health assessment that came out that did show that a third of children in Josephine County are food insecure. And so they're going to bed hungry more often than not. And so one of the things we noticed with some of the federal benefit programs like SNAP, WIC, TANF is that at the end of the month there was still money left on the table. And so how do we teach people how to better utilize that? And so we created this six-week program that piggybacks on other wellness programs that already exist, so like a diabetes management class or whatever, to increase the consumption of fresh produce.
I honestly wish SNAP and TANF could be more like a WIC program that you had to find things you had to get.
Yeah.
Versus you can go to TANF and buy your cigarettes and your alcohol and or trade them for something else. And the food stamps, it's, I had one client, Brett, and she got a wedding cake for $300 with her food stamps. Mm-hmm. And so it's like, I don't think that's what it was meant for. But
yeah, and that's the exception, not the rule.
We're seeing that a lot.
So these are some of these programs, you know. So this dovetails with SNAP, it dovetails with some of the other programs to sort of get at that issue.
WIC requires a visit every 3 months.
Yeah.
Do any of these other ones require classes for participation?
And I'm not 100% versed in those, so
okay.
I can't really speak to that. But we do know that just WIC in and of itself brought $1.4 million into the valley for local businesses, and that. For every dollar that's spent in WIC, it's between like $1.92 and $4.21 that are saved in healthcare costs. So, I mean, these programs do make an impact, and so what we're trying to do with the VeggieRx is not really redesign the system, but create another support that gets people to understand how to integrate these foods into their diets.
Well, our growers market has a great partnership with the SNAP program that you can use your food stamps for getting vegetables at the growers market with a 2-to-1 ratio.
I don't love food bucks. Yeah.
So, I mean, that's great, at least in the summertime, getting people eating veggies.
Yeah, and the double up food bucks that has been fully ramped up and is running in Jackson County, I don't know if that's the case in Grants Pass.
Yeah.
It's
not anymore?
No, trying to get it.
There's
yeah. Right now, it's not.
Yeah.
Okay. Last year, the Josephine market had to redo their tax status. So they did not even accept SNAP last year until close to the end of the season. But now they've got that back on board.
Yeah, so we're working with them to get that kind of up and running and do what we can. And so the other thing that I'm doing in my position is working with the hospital in Asante and Providence to build out a regional community health needs assessment. We want to try to avoid assessment fatigue. I think we're doing assessments of our assessment to evaluate it. And so we're trying to get partners to work together so we can really have a comprehensive, robust set of data that we're all working from. So if we know what the vision is for the community, we can all start to address those from the different points that create problems. So I am working on writing that right now with one of my colleagues. the epidemiologist for Jackson County. So we are hoping to have that out by the end of May. That is everything we have here for me.
Thank you.
Simon.
Good morning.
So I'm Maude Powell.
Glad to meet you.
I'm
Maude Lilly.
Hi, Lilly. Hi, nice to see you again. So I run the Small Farms Program, and I'm really based in Jackson County. I try to spend about a day up here a week, but I'm only funded at half time, so it's kind of covering a lot of ground.
So that would be 2.5 days a week.
Yes, exactly. Yeah, 2.5 days, and then about a day up here, depending on the time of year. So in terms of who I'm really serving, I mean, small farms by the USDA are defined as a farm is any agricultural operation that's grossing over $1,000, and a small farm goes up to $250,000. So technically, that's who I'm serving. What I found is that there are a lot of people that own property. They might buy 20 acres, and they have this idea that maybe they'd like to make some money off of it. So I have a lot of people that come in fairly new to owning any kind of property at all and need just some basic information and how to manage their weeds, how to manage pasture, how to find the right pump for their irrigation system. And then the questions come up of, wow, can I make some money off this property as well? So that's, you know, some of the people I serve. I also work with a lot of young people that are interested in farming as a vocation. So this is really kind of an up-and-coming career field for people. And that's exciting. Some of those people own land, some don't own land. So we do some work around helping people find and negotiate land leases. And then we also work with people that are commercial, that have been in commercial production. They may have been farming for generations. And either they need technical assistance around a new pest that's just come in, or perhaps their business plan is changing. They may be looking to into farm succession, so who's going to take over the farm. Or they may be looking at starting a new enterprise or looking into new types of markets. So work on really varied issues. That's just a little bit about it. So I'm funded at half-time, and through program revenue and grants, we're able to have three other people that work part-time in the office, which is great. We have a really, like I mentioned, a lot of people interested in starting a farm, so we have a pretty comprehensive program, starting with a one-evening class, then a three-session class that we'll be hosting next week. Growing Farms is kind of our flagship program for small farms around the state. It's now a hybrid program, so a lot of it's online. Last year in 2016, we hosted that here in Josephine County and had 8 farmers who attended that and came out with a business plan at the end of it so they could take to get some startup loans.
And that's 8 farmers in Josephine County not doing cannabis?
Yes. Wow. Yeah. I mean, not all of them. Some of them are I know, exactly. Yeah, it's been a huge issue for us to not address through the program. Livestock and forage are huge in this county as well as in Jackson County. So we do offer, those are the classes that we offered just last year, addressing all kind of aspects of management and marketing as well, because it's a huge thing. It's one thing to grow or raise something, but then how are you actually going to make a profit on it?
I'm taken back by the number of sheep in the Willamette Valley, and I know that that's an integration grass seed industry, but who's eating all this land? Is it marketed internationally? Because I don't feel...
In the Willamette Valley or down here?
Well, up here, for sure, but down here, I mean, if somebody was...
I don't know if there's a lot of sheep.
What do you think about growing sheep? Who's buying them?
Yeah. Well, the farmers I work with, I really work with small growers, and so... kind of inherently to make a profit as a small producer, you really have to be doing a lot of direct markets.
Okay.
So that's more of what I work with, with other people, direct marketing.
Well, there's larger, you know, a couple hundred sheep on the field, but...
Right, those may be international markets,
Integrated into the grass seed because the grass will grow more stalks if it's been mowed off.
Yeah, as long as it's not overgrazed.
Yeah, right? It's
a whole science, grazing management. And so then we've really seen in the last couple of years that as we have more farmers and we don't have a huge metropolitan area in the Rogue Valley, that we're seeing a lot of the direct markets become more and more saturated. So They're, you know, growers who go to the markets or who run community support agriculture programs are seeing that they're not able to sell as much as they'd like to at the price point that they'd like. So we're doing some education on wholesale and scaling up, and that is partly the issue with institutions and schools in particular, is how can we ramp up production so that farms can sell at a lower price point and still be profitable. So we've been working with them on how to, you know, increase production, labor management, how to deal with post-harvest handling, so that increases the shelf life for produce. Profitability, looking at different market analysis, so looking at different markets and, you know, and profitability around that. And then we have a couple of farmer networks. So we've had our League of Women Farmers that started about 8 years ago, and that really came out of a need of for a lot of women who wanted to do some skill building training, so learn how to, you know, maintain their tractors, how to do welding and carpentry and tree pruning and things that they had kind of historically been excluded from, and they wanted their own type of training. So it came out of a community need, and now it's just really popular. So we have 6 to 8 meetings or workshops a year. Next week we're going to do a workshop on how to develop an employee handbook, because, you know, HR is actually a big part of being a farmer, is managing your employees. And then we've got some other good events coming up. And then seed education has become a pretty big part of my program. More and more we're seeing vegetable seeds is a great product for this area. It's our climate is perfect for seed production, with the nice hot, dry summers and falls. There's an increasing demand for, especially for organic seed in particular, as the market share of organic increases and the National Organic Program rules around seed sourcing. They're now requiring that organic produce is grown with organic seed. So we're looking at this as a real niche opportunity for small producers who want to grow seed. So a lot of work around that. And then this is just an example of some of the other classes that we offer. We do a lot of needs assessment, so all of our classes we survey the attendees to find out what else they'd like us, what other programs are interested in. We try to be pretty nimble and up to speed on different state regulations and opportunities for small farmers. So, for example, a few years ago, Oregon State passed what's called the Pickle Bill, or the Farm Direct Law, which means that farmers can do value-added productions. They can make jams or pickles or sauces without a commercial kitchen, up to $20,000. And that's a real boon for small farmers to be able to add some products and do value-added products to be able to sell them at growers' markets. So right away, we offered several classes on how to take advantage of that and the specifics around that law. So
that's, I think the county last year funded a commercial kitchen going into Kirby, like the Bell Island out there.
Yeah.
And that would be a neat thing. We also were partners in the Regional Solutions Program of the Five Family.
Yeah.
Food consolidated things. So that was pretty cool.
Yeah.
Making sure that it was available to Josephine County small farmers is a big part of that.
The Fry in particular.
Yeah.
Fry
that was a big deal.
Yeah, we'll be taking a tour of that in April for our League of Women Farmers. So.
Great.
Yeah. So that's any questions?
Is there anything we can be doing here at the county level to help with that? Because I think that's a pretty important program.
Yeah.
Resiliency in an area that we don't have to talk about, you know, if there's a problem nationally with fiscal or even a Cascadia event, our ability to feed ourselves a little bit better locally, because everything we do comes on a truck. And we're just so reliant on some other parts of the world or the country.
Yeah. One of the big issues that's coming up right now is the need for processing equipment, for minimal processing. And this is to help farmers, again, get stuff in the schools. But things like industrial grading machine, like grading as in G-R-A-T, and cubing. So this is like a big up-and-coming thing around in the farm-to-school world, is being able to do some minimally processed foods, and then the school kitchens can prepare more easily.
It was an issue with Ratchet Creek Farms, where they wanted to actually bag everything up out there and process.
Right.
And there had to be a ratio of how much was grown on site versus what the process.
Okay.
They couldn't reprocess out there, especially exclusive farm use lands.
Right. So I don't, I mean, that's one thing that comes to mind, is that that would be an investment if it could be used by local farmers. It would increase our market share and be able to get better food into the school system.
Mm-hmm.
So,
cool.
Yeah.
Okay.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Thank you. She's a seasoned professional presenter. She's pretty good. That was good.
That was quick, and
yeah.
Hopefully mine will be
incredibly
short and sweet.
Well,
and short and
yours
sweet.
Is always really interesting.
Nice to see you again. Max, Dan. Lily, nice to meet you.
Thank you.
Great, so I have the Extension Forestry and Natural Resources Program, and I am based in Jackson County, and I work in both Jackson and Josephine counties, and also work on some statewide projects with other colleagues, other forestry agents around the state. I've been here for about 15 years, actually 17 years, so quite a while. Love the job. The three audiences that I work primarily with are, first of all, small woodland owners. So these are our folks out in, you know, rural Josephine County, rural Jackson County that own forest land or woodland. They may not think of themselves as forest land owners, but they have forest land, woodland.
The assessor probably thinks that they are.
The assessor thinks that they are, and I will talk about some assessor's data here in a second, but there are about 6,000 in each of the two counties, you know, depending on how you tally it up. So a fair number of folks out there actually have forest land. So that's one audience. Another audience is simply, you know, folks living in rural areas outside of the urban growth boundaries. And in the biz, we call it the wild and urban interface. So it's folks in the interface.
You know, the county with the largest number of small woodland owners.
Yeah, what, in Oregon?
Yeah.
Or, well, Josephine County is right up there, but probably Clackamas.
It is. It's
Clackamas.
I didn't.
Yeah.
I wouldn't thought Clackamas being kind of a metro
right.
county has over 5,000.
Yeah, it's
crazy.
It's actually Clackamas, Jackson, and Josephine County are right, but Clackamas
right.
is right up there on top.
Yes.
Yep.
Well, and when I was just up there, I was telling you guys that I went to take the kids to school and literally had to stop for three logging trucks going this direction and a couple going that direction. I hadn't seen logging trucks since high school at that level, you know.
Well, yeah, there's quite an industry up there. So. So the small woodland owners, the interface owners, and really the third audience is the natural resource professional, the local forestry and natural resource community around here. So what do I do to make this go? There we go. So one of the main issues, should not be a big surprise in Southern Oregon, is wildfire. And so this is an issue that I deal with partnering agencies around education to try to help homeowners be better prepared for wildfire and to also make their forests more fire resistant. Another issue, I'll be very delicate with this, that woodland owners are always concerned about is forest health. They want to have healthy forests, and lately we've had some really serious issues with dead and dying trees, particularly Douglas fir, due to the drought and in some cases forests that are just simply too dense. And so dealing with that issue has been on my radar screen quite a bit lately. And then we also have, I think Maude alluded to this a little bit, a continuing stream of new folks coming into the area, they want to live the rural Southern Oregon dream, they buy property. Looking at the assessor's database from Josephine County, my assistant did a little bit of work, and she came up with a total of about 1,100 new owners in the past, woodland owners in the past 5 years.
Mm.
And a turnover of, I don't remember if it was 16, 17, 18, it was pretty significant.
Yeah.
You know, and actually we have the data back to about 2000, and as the economy, this even predates the whole cannabis thing, you know, as the economy improved, the number of new owners has really skyrocketed. So that's
she's aggressively going out and making sure that people who are getting their forest exemption actually have the intent to grow and harvest.
Right, right. And that's been one of the
CCNRs have been a big deal. She's taken tons of people who CCNR restricts their ability to cut trees.
Hmm.
And so they don't get that exemption.
Forest exemption.
Yeah.
If they want the, right. That's interesting. I wasn't really aware of that effort. So if you just a few of the programs that I have been involved with or helped direct, one of them is called Citizen Fire Academy. That's a new program, actually a statewide curriculum development and extension forestry with other partners like the Oregon Department of Forestry. There's actually a hybrid program, which means there's a bit of an online component and a bit of an in-person component. Mm-hmm. And it's designed to train homeowners and landowners how to better protect their property, how to, you know, prepare for evacuation, how to have a more fire-resistant forest, and then how to spread that message to other homeowners, landowners in the community. Done a little bit of work with the FireWise program. One of the programs that I did for natural resource professionals was looking at the issue of riparian fire, riparian being streamside areas, so they're, you know, very important for water quality, but they're also fire issues, and so how do we sort of balance those issues? And this was a science workshop that we did last year to address that. Master Woodland Manager is very similar to Master Gardener in sort of the general approach. You come to various training sessions, and then you provide some volunteer service. Land Stewards is a program that's actually run by a faculty member over in Jackson County, but we have owners in both counties, and I work on that program as well, and that's really targeting the new and inexperienced owner coming to the area. You know, I just came from one of my favorite guys was a guy who came to the Applegate. He had lived in cities of 5 million or more prior to buying, you know, 10 acres in the 10 acres in the Applegate. So we see a lot of that kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. You know, just new.
And he told you how to grow trees.
And he was, until one day he was leaving his property and he saw a curl of smoke, and that sort of set him on a path through learning a lot more about his property, including becoming a master woodland manager. He's a great guy.
Person moved into the neighborhood, that was my parents' place a couple of years ago, and they mowed their field, and they didn't know they were going to have to keep mowing it all year until it dried out. You're going to have to do that a couple of times, because they did it with a push mower and 3 acres.
Oh,
wow.
I was like,
nice.
What, are you crazy?
Oh.
No,
that's
real. Works right in with your physical exercise program.
There you go, right. And that's one of the things is people just don't realize oftentimes that, you know, how much work it takes to maintain a property.
How much are you, and I know we're out of time here.
Sure.
And one thing we wanted to say to John is, as we're looking at the next couple of years with the lease and the kitchen and all that, if there is a need that the county can provide a different space, if there's any things that we want to be a good partner in that, we want to see opportunities to expand our extension services with you guys. What's that disease that's coming through the ghetto?
Sudden oak death.
Sudden oak death, yeah. Right.
So some friends just took out some trees in Merlin's. They
right.
cut down their oak. Middle of it's all rotted out. They're just good.
Yeah, it right. Sudden oak death is confined in Oregon to Curry County.
If you guys don't mind just waiting in the hall for a few minutes, we'll be ending this meeting and then we'll.
Okay, well, that's a sign to hurry up. So just a couple of quick slides of some programs. This was a forest health program that we did. There was so much interest last year in all these dead and dying trees. This is from the Master Woodland Manager class, just looking at a deck of recently cut timber, just to give you a little flavor of that. Some of the programs I'm working on this year, we have a program coming up here at RCC just in a few weeks. It's called Living on Your Land and Tree School Rogue. 27 different classes, trees, woods, natural resources. I think it's a great program. I'm doing another science meeting focused on the flat-headed fir borer. That's one of the things that's killing all these trees. And we have entomologists and pathologists coming from California, Washington, Oregon, just getting a group of folks really focus on this issue, see if we can come up with some better.
Really get the Applegate core.
The Applegate in particular, as far as.
Are you guys testifying at the state level with some of the pushback we're getting at the state with not allowing healthy forest management? Is that something that you guys are at the table showing how thinning is helpful for keeping our forests alive?
Definitely, that is something that it's a complicated issue, but that's definitely something that I do talk about in my programs, is how you can benefit forest health and reduce fire risk by doing, you know, judicious thinning and
But I mean, testifying at the state level with the legislator and the Senate so they know, because otherwise they're not hearing it.
That isn't really my bailiwick, but other folks from OSU have done so.
That's what I mean. OSU as a whole,
yeah, that's true.
They're going to be respected in the research that they offer.
Yeah, and we really try to hew to, you know, what does the science say about, you know, the effects of thing on fire behavior? So, but my time is up. So,
thank you.
But fortunately,
I'm done. All of you. Nice job.
Max, thank you. I always get interchanged.
Thank you. Nice to meet you.
Yeah.
I'll be back.
Yeah. I'm going to adjourn the meeting at 10:59.